they ask questions that are so loaded, you know?
Yeah.
Or they but any, I mean, anytime someone who gives you a false dichotomy, you know, do you think this is a good idea or not? You know, like, well...
Oh, well, you're not going to like the questions I ask you.
It's like, no, damn it.
No, we'll try not to load the questions too much. But I think this is a good place to start.
Okay.
Ready to roll?
I was born ready.
Born ready. Cool. So, hey guys, welcome to the Raw Barbell Club podcast. I'm your host, Andy. I'm here today with Renanian D'Artagnan.
It's not my name. It's Rhiannon.
And our guest today is Peter Upham from Shire Speed and Strength.
Thank you for having me. Supersonic.
So, Peter, tell us a bit about yourself. We know that you've trained a lot of high-caliber athletes in Australia in multiple sports, weightlifting, gymnastics, track and field.
Football
of all disciplines, and a few others.
Well, I think if you coach for long enough, I mean, eventually you're going to run into some people who... dealt some pretty good cards genetically, yeah. And so they're gonna go far. So I think it's only natural that people will focus on the elite outcomes that invariably come with being involved for a long period of time. But I mean, we all know, or everyone has met a coach who was at a high level who curiously didn't seem to be that impressive or unable to also carry that through to being able to coach anybody. So I like the idea of being able to coach anybody or be able to, you know, provide some value to anybody who needs it. And if you own a gym, then it's only a matter of time before people come to you needing help. And so I think that the original motivation is to want to help people and that can mean that they may go far if they start with potential, or if they stick out long enough. It may be a short term thing, but yes, indeed, I've had the good fortune to be involved in quite a few sports, and so that's meant that applying, I guess, general principles, or let's say global principles, to just about any sport. So I feel like if someone comes to me, even if they're involved in a sport that I may not have had much experience with to that point, we can at least have a starting discussion where we unpack, you know, what's the nature of this sport, what are the capacities of fitness, what are you doing now, what can't you do, what do we need to do, and then have a look around and see, well, this is what the better people are doing. Let's not just emulate what they're doing, but also let's see if we can perhaps do a little bit better.
Yeah.
And so if you know, once you get in the habit of doing that over and over again, then you start to see patterns forming. And so that's that broadly describes, I guess, philosophically where we've gotten to, certainly where we are today.
Cool. I think it's really important for people at home who don't know you and who want to know more about you to see where you started and where you came from. So tell me a little bit about little Peter.
Oh, okay.
Itty bitty little Peter.
Well, the gym is Shire Speed and Strength. So we're in the Sutherland Shire. This is where I grew up. In fact, the high school I went to is literally 150 meters away. I went to Caringbah High School, which is just the next corner. So I think we had, I had my high school reunion last year, and I think I probably should have won the award for the person who has traveled, you know, who has moved the least distance from where we were as school kids. But in between, that's meant travels far and wide. I was, you know, not a great athlete in school. didn't particularly have a specific interest in any one sport, but it was only later on that I got involved in more developed sports and developed an interest in American football, which in Australia is very, very small.
So that was at the age of like 16, 17?
Yeah, so, I guess I was 17, turning 18, and if I had have been born in another country, I think I would not have been interested in it because being the way that it is, and certainly what I've been interested in terms of other sports, it's, I guess I'm a bit of a contrarian, so it's the things that are not particularly popular that are seemingly more interesting. So that's how I started in terms of my own personal sport, which is not particularly landmark in any way. People will often ask me about how they can improve as coaches, where to start, how to grow their knowledge. So we probably have, I guess nearly, if I had to guess, I'd say about a third of the members of this gym are involved in somewhere in terms of exercise prescription. So we have a lot of members of the gym who are personal trainers, who are exercise physiologists, physiotherapists, radiologists. So it's only a short amount of time before the question comes up of, what should I listen to, who should I read, who should I talk to in seminars and these kind of things. And usually the kind of answer I guess they're looking for or they have experienced in the past, have gone to people is, read this book, talk to this person, read this person's website, listen to their podcast. And I feel like that may be a step. There's an initial step that needs to happen, and that is that you need to care, obviously. There needs to be a motivation for it. And I tell people that I think the first thing you need to do is acquire problems. If you acquire problems, then that insatiable drive to want to take in the content that you then go on to consume, and more importantly, practice it, that's where that can start taking place. So people say, what did you do? I'm not an exercise physiologist. I'm not a personal trainer. I have a sign on the door that says no personal trainers allowed, despite the fact, as I said a moment ago, that we have quite a few people in here who are involved in the community. Because when I finished school, other than traveling and playing sport and things like this, I was driving trucks and these kind of things. Menial sort of jobs. But it's I feel like the advantage that I had was that I didn't follow that well-trodden path of going to university, getting a degree, and these kind of things. So in some ways that can be a deficiency, but it gives me the liberty to drive things in the way that I have come to, evolve those practices in terms of competition. So why do I do what I did? Because I had these problems, solved these problems, ran experiments, drew on information that is, quite easy to obtain. We're very fortunate, I think we'd all agree, that the access to information has never been easier.
Now, yeah.
And so we probably have whilst I guess the industry of the community is a little bit more geared towards acquiring accreditation, credential, there may be it's experience that people really want. They only jump through these hoops because they feel they need to or they actually need to. You can tell by their questions that they want the content, they want the practice, they want the experience of problem solving and successful outcomes because of that. So
it was actually one of my questions. I was wondering, the exercise physios, the PTs, they obviously come to you wanting to be better coaches, all that sort of thing, but what's probably the first question that they come to you with, and what is it that you want them to walk away with?
Well, they probably on a personal level they'll come along to work on their own skills, which is a natural place to start. You know, so they're, let's say it's, you know, it's barbell lifting, and so you know, I'm deadlifting, I'm squatting, I'm snatching, I'm learning these things, or they're somewhat there, and I feel like I'm not going anywhere with them. So often it starts with skills, and then that progresses onto programming considerations, and then, but that is quite a, that's still quite a gap between the, you know, developing oneself and then being able to apply that practice to develop
other
people.
Absolutely.
But then not just one other person also, but anybody. That's that's quite a different stream. So they're usually the kind of questions that come up, and the I think the design of the environment, the way the industry has evolved, is that what's supposed to happen is that your grounding in fundamentals is supposed to allow for very fertile growth in those areas. But I just don't know if that is actually how that works. I feel like it's actually a little bit backwards. I feel like because there's not nearly enough practice, there's not nearly enough experience being developed at the same time, that there's an over reliance on theory and nomenclature and systems or capacities of this knowledge, which should seem end up being quite a long way away. So they have a grounding in anatomy. They have a very fundamental grounding in biomechanics, but because they're hearing it, they're being tested on it, but because they're not developing experience with it, it hasn't really bloomed in any sort
of way. No,
I agree,
consequence.
Where
completely.
I feel like, if anything, I would say mine has been completely the other way around, is that the biomechanics becomes important when you start thinking about how can I get that person to fire out of this, you know, their 3-point stance faster, you know, and then it becomes, because then I want to learn it, I want to, you know.
Well, you can conceptualize it.
Yeah.
It absolutely. So I think that's probably a fairer explanation of how we got to where we are. So
how did you become involved with the Sutherland Seahawks?
Well, that was really a contrarian sport, a small sport, a cult sport, both at that time and now. It is a thinking man's game. It does require quite a bit of. So it's not just a physical, some stressful physically. It has an appeal, I guess, to your spatial awareness and these kind of things. There's a lot of strategy that goes into it. You can't just, it's not a pickup game, in other words. You can't just get, you know, a bunch of guys together and just kind of have a go. You really do have to plan and these kind of things. And that's quite appealing, because most sports in Australia are probably not quite like that. They are a bit more...
Anyone can pick up...
Well, they're participation-based, and that's what we do in Australia. We do participation really well.
Yeah.
When it comes to really going deep and narrow with sports, that is probably not quite as well developed. So that was appealing to me, and I was fortunate to, be at a club that had, as they all do, but there are many clubs, if you think of it that way, that's how our sport is based. It's club based, it's not school based. That, you know, if you're willing to put some volunteer effort into it, you're going to be valuable. You know, so there's a lot of work to do. There's a job there for somebody. So when you're young and get involved, and it's like, hell, you know, I'm doing some good. You know, and then of course you want to win, and then that's where I talk about that impetus for wanting to know more and get better starts. And and I've been involved ever since, and been fortunate to be involved at, a relatively high level too. So that's where that started.
So a problem that we have in weightlifting especially is very similar to what you discussed with the gridiron, which the Sutherland Seahawks is a gridiron team. And that's that we have very... Well, we're starting to have more and more, obviously, but because it's not a... you know, a school-driven sport or a sport that's based on participation, it is very club-driven, and we don't see a lot of youth participation. But that's something that you did a lot with the gridiron teams as well, right?
The biggest issue that we have in and it's good that you've identified that there is actually a common issue there, and that is, so what happens in gridiron is that we get a lot of refugees from other sports. So they've, you know, the more traditional sports people have grown up with, they play soccer and AFL and netball and these kind of things. They try those, they go as far as they're going to go, and then they're looking for something else. And we know that there's, you know, dropout rates and stuff like this as people get older, which should be no mystery to any of us, because people find more important things to do than school and jobs and so on. But yeah, we get a lot of mature age athletes who are refugees from other sports, who may be coming back into organized sport after a short layoff. They're fans of the sport, so their entry point is with regards to the appeal of the high level that they may see on television. And then they want to learn. And so what happens is, from an organization point of view, and every organization wants to be bigger, but to really develop from top to bottom, that takes time, you know? And it's just a lot easier to just essentially just play that 1 year over and over again of, hey, there's people coming to us who are enthusiastic now. Let's facilitate their interest. And okay. And I guess, you know, weightlifting is a little bit like that too. You know, there's not a generational attraction or interest in weightlifting. Many of the people who were involved in weightlifting, their parents were not interested or... So, didn't really know anything about it, or didn't know that it happened here. And so it's only natural for an organization to facilitate the interest in the here and now, because the generational development takes time. You know, that's a very long term consideration, and it often goes beyond their a couple of things. You know, the funding potential, the length of time that the organization or board is in place. So they might be in place for a year or 2 years or 4 years, and then they move on to the next one. So it's only natural that people will satisfy the more immediate needs. And but look, I've tried to export my time and energy towards developing youth gridiron. And so we have last 3 years in particular has been very successful in that regard. And I've throttled my involvement at a higher level, just because I've tried it the other way. It doesn't work very well. In terms of weightlifting, the hard thing will always be that parents are very, they are out of the habit of thinking about strength as a capacity of fitness as being something that's good for kids.
Yeah.
They're quite happy to put their kid into a collision sport. They're quite happy for their kid to run around and play basketball on the asphalt and this sort of stuff and run and jump and whatever. But my God, if they touch a barbell, they'll instantly be smooshed down into 1,000 pieces and this kind of stuff. I mean, there is just...
Oh, no... is that not the case?
Well, you will notice over in the corner there is actually a pile of broken bodies, okay, of midgets who were, like, smooshed down the barbells. And I don't usually show that off to people.
But sometimes they see. The
but sometimes they're going to... And so you've got to tell them. Yeah. And that's what happened. I mean, obviously, it's baloney. You know, and if you could just get people to think a little bit clearer about the difference between force. Okay. I mean, basically, they have no... They're not thinking about the implications of speed.
Yep.
They're quite happy for their kid to run fast. They're happy for their kid to run fast amongst other kids that are running fast. They're happy for kids to run fast, you know, on a hard surface. But the moment you put... you do some tonic work, okay, then it's like, oh, my God, they couldn't possibly... And I would say, if anything, it's the other way around. Like, we should be starting the tonic things.
You need to build the capacity before you can even...
So,
load those things through, like, high-impact sports.
So, but look, that's not going to change anytime soon. The ones who have already decided, yes, this is something you can do, then I feel like it's well worth trying to develop. Look, last year there was Leo Isaac. He had published a had started this some dialogue, a paper about what do we do to improve the highest levels of weightlifting. Invariably, you can't talk about that without talking about how do you grow junior kids' involvement and yep. what do you do with that. And so I think that would more dialogue about that would probably be a good thing. I know Danielle Waller has I think her Instagram page is Ollie for Kids, something like this.
Yeah.
And I think she produced a text on little kids, okay, like kindy gym kind of age being involved. And I think the reason was that I think she had a daughter who was of that age, and so that was the impetus for her involvement in wanting to produce that kind of text. So all of those initiatives are part of part of the solution.
And there is a lot of obstacle in the way too, because there was an ASCA paper that was released that I think you posted that as well about.
Yeah. So
this is the loaded question.
Oh yeah. Look, Scott, who works with me here at Shy Speed and Strength, that was something that he ran into and was asking me about it, and just about any paper will there are shortcomings. There's only so much you can put into what is a very broad subject. I feel like that there's a strong theme of let's say that kids should not specialize in a sport too early. I'm sure you've encountered this kind of dialogue before.
Yeah.
And I feel like that this is misplaced. So like the idea that if you're going to be a successful athlete, professional, Olympics, whatever, different sports, that what you should do is you should play a whole bunch of sports and then you should specialize later on. And that the reason that we have a dropout rate that is what it is, and the what happens in Australia is somewhat mimicked in other similar countries, so UK or United States, something like this, that we would overcome both the dropout rate problem and the elite development problem if kids just played more sports. It'd be greater variety. And I felt like that's not a well-formed argument.
Yeah.
For one, it's not really an argument because it is kind of shooting from the hip a little bit. But even if that was a well-coalesced kind of thought, then I don't think it really stands up to either A, the evidence, or B, philosophically, I don't think this could be possible. And what I mean by that is that I don't see that as being the problem. I see the fact that it's endless participation is the issue with no greater development. So what would be my evidence for this? When I run into athletes from all sorts of sports, track and field, football codes, barbell sports, what happens is if they are talented, they participate endlessly. That there is no overall development going on, that they get picked in, inverted commas, rep teams.
Yeah.
They get selected to development squads. Now, these are not development squads. Well, they are, there is, why are they important squads? Because, let's say in rugby league, okay, which is the certainly in this area, the most common scenario, more likely what happens is that there'll be 40 kids, we need 25. And what happens is they'll kind of just turn the volume up in training until 15 of them cut themselves or get busted or something like this. is any real development been going on? Okay, not really, because when you look at what happens is they're playing for their club, they're playing rep, they're playing for their school, they're perhaps playing some other sport as well as. There's no overall observation of all of this. There's no throttling of workload. There's no, you know, is, you know, this kid, you know, has these strengths, has these weaknesses. You know, what are we doing to, you know, where is this kid in their calendar? Where is this kid in terms of their development? None of that is happening. It is very disjointed, it's really endless participation. And it's not real development. So, and the other thing about it is that this statement that more variety of sport will more holistically develop an athlete. Well, that's really a bit of a coin flip, because it's almost as if you're saying that each sport has a very, very narrow set of fitness capacities. So, to me, if I'm going to be a sprinter, okay, yes, my endurance capacity may be diminished, but I still have to have great biomechanics. I still have to be strong. I have to be powerful. I have to have, you know, my energy system, my bioenergetic development has to be there. So I feel like that it's almost as if what we're trying to do is we're trying to develop athletes accidentally by prescribing haphazard variety, as opposed to actually seeing, here's a kid, they're really interested in this sport. If they're interested, then let's do that sport well. And there seems to be a tremendous prejudice against kids that, you know, that they can't do a sport well. Okay, that if you try to develop them globally within the sport, that means they're going to turn into some sort of robotic East German, you know, droid or something like this. You know, that they're going to be this humorless, you know, emotionless thing. Now, we know that's a totally different problem, but I see kids, if they're interested, if they're coachable,
yeah,
let's coach them as much as they will. So, you know, if someone comes in here and I'll say, how often should I train? You know, I'm really, really keen, and I always give them my smart-ass answer first. I'll say, you should train 28 times a week. And they go, 28 times a week? What are you crazy? There's no way I could do that. And I said, well, how often can you train? Oh, I could probably train, you know, 3 or 4 times this week, but the next week I'm off work, and then I could train. So, okay, well, that's what we'll design the training around your logistical concerns, you know. So the kid who has, you know, X number of hours to give, and then we will train and use that time as efficiently as we can. But, you know, I, what I'm getting at is I hate hearing an argument like, you know, this kid, you know, he's a big kid, kind of lumbers a little bit on the football field. You know, maybe we'll get him to play basketball in the off-season. I'm like, come on. You know, you're exporting your problem to somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, why don't you actually train them? So, hey, if they get better from playing basketball, well, great. And if they enjoy it, great. But don't use that as your problem solving skills. I mean, it's just, surely we can do better. So that to me is a better, a more honest assessment of the situation.
I find that really interesting. I was going to ask you how you differentiate between coaching your youth and actually getting them to maintain interest and stay on in their sport, because they just chop and change all over the place.
Well, there's nothing wrong if someone plays. Like, the other thing is that people talk about leaving sport. Okay, what's so bad about that? Why is that a bad thing? If they're doing something like if they leave sport and their life crashes and burns and they're doing nothing, you know, and they're a meth addict, you know, hanging around the train station, obviously that's bad. But there, you could say the same thing about every institution that they're involved in: their family, their friends, their work, all these sort of things. You know, but if, you know, if someone was a talented, and here's me who benefits tremendously by people staying in sport, and I say to you, if they were a great track and field runner, okay, and or they could have been a decathlete, they could have been really, really good, really netball player, and then they think and they say, you know what, I you know, I really want to knuckle down, I really want to do well at school, or I have this other, you know, goal of photography or art or something like this, then why is it so bad that they... Now, they've turned up as a statistic.
Yeah.
As some sort of negative outcome that sporting codes have to solve the problem to. Why is that a problem? Yeah. I would benefit tremendously if they stay and they keep training. But would that person... I mean, I'm therefore making a value judgment that that person has to be involved in sport.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that from a... like the Australian Sports Commission or different sporting federations will look at it in that way.
Because that's how they derive funding.
Absolutely. But then, and then there has a knock-on effect potentially into health outcomes and this kind of thing. Of course, we have to recognise that. But that is quite a different consideration to the sport in the here and now and the way that they may then go on to assess, well, geez, you know, I thought we were onto something there. You know, I thought we were training this kid well and this kind of thing. But what I say is I do not... I don't train people differently based on age. If they're in their 70s, if they are 7, philosophically, I always start the same way. Well, they may be a high-level semi-professional athlete or a professional athlete. Start by seeing if they can adapt to what works for everybody.
Yeah.
And then evolve after that based on what they absolutely need. You know, for a 7-year-old, the needs are more likely to be something that they were born with, or perhaps, you know, I guess any kid could be recently injured from something. But generally speaking, they're fresh clay. The other end of the spectrum, age populations, they're going to have some baggage you're probably going to have to deal with. You know, the more elite potentialed athletes, they're probably going to have potentially some baggage. And certainly some considerations in the short term. Where are they in their calendar? Okay, what are they doing with their sporting coach or their team? You know, what are they absolutely absent in terms of never having developed? And that's a good place to start. But I never say to somebody, or should I say, if someone says, "Oh, you know, my son, my daughter is this old. Can they start?" I always say, "Do they want to do it?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they're interested in this. Because there are people in their 20s who have got great genetics who are uncoachable. They don't want to be coached. They just want to play. And that's the difference between exercise and training. It has nothing to do with talent. It has to do with the mental part of it. And whether you're really interested in solving an individual, their own problems. If it's a coach, are they interested in solving other people's problems? So I think that philosophically can never be avoided. You have to address this at some point.
Cool. We talked about obviously sports with a quiet presence, but with the NFL in particular, with gridiron stuff, what did you have any particular strategies that you did to help develop the youth participation? I'm trying to look for things that we can use in weightlifting if there's any crossover at all.
Well, I will say this. So the reason why we started to develop the youth part of it more so I'm talking about, so now at my club, for example, we have our youth football is the kids who are, you know, under 15, so they're 14 down through. I think we had a couple of kids that were like 11 last year. And then we have our Colts team, which is kind of like, you know, senior high school. So, these are kids who are 16, 17, into 18. And then after that, we have senior football. So, there's three levels in terms of age, and we'll look at that way. And over time, my interest has become, steering towards the younger age groups. Partly because I see the need for it, but also I've had the very good fortune of people who have started at our club who have, matured. They are now in a position to drive our Colts football and our senior football, whereas before I had to do a lot of that myself.
Yeah.
So it is a bit of a luxury, as you said. But basically, the issue was this: we have people contacting the club, parents. My son is very interested, and he likes watching on television, this kind of thing, and do have anything. And for a long time, I had to kind of turn them away. I'll come back in 2 years' time, and you don't want to. It seemed silly, you know, to have that sort of situation. So, in that respect, I wouldn't say that I had, in weightlifting, that there was a groundswell of kids bugging parents to say, "I want to get involved in weightlifting, I want to get involved." Because they don't, it's obviously not nearly as accessible.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have that that fan support. I find that for weightlifting, I'm probably sure you agree that the entry point more so is people who have recognized the sporting expression of weightlifting being used as a general preparation for other sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take long in sport to recognize that capacities of fitness, strength, particularly in Australia, which is so underdeveloped. We just don't have a tradition of strength development in Australia. That there is a utility for people who have strength building skills, and that if they can start incorporating that in their training, then that is a good point. So most of the people are people who've already said, "I'm playing my sport. I have a problem. I'm not strong enough.
Yeah.
I need to be training generally. These are things that everyone seems to be doing. I need to start doing those things too." So most people who get involved, I think, in weightlifting in Australia are, they're not even in their teens, they're mostly in their 20s, you'll find. And then there's the whole, I guess, fitness industry apparatus where if you can, there is a desire to appear as if you are being an elite specialist. If you can appear to be an elite specialist, then you can then start to impart this wisdom on other people who will be curious about it and who also want to acquire it. So that's a good moneymaker. That's basically, the fitness industry is huge and it's grown probably every year and will continue to grow every single year. So, but in terms of the kids, no, I don't see it being kid or child orientated. That won't be the impetus. You won't have kids bugging parents. It's hard to see where parents will start to want to encourage their kid to do it. I think of the idea about, you've seen like local soccer teams sign up night where all the parents are sitting there in a long line, strand like, zigzagging across the field waiting to sign their kid up for $350, something. So if it's going to happen, it'll probably be an extrapolation of people using barbell lifting to improve themselves at other sports. And I think that's a reasonable strategy, really, that if they're playing football codes, netball, track and field, that, hey, let's... Yeah, these are kids that are reasonably talented. Let's see if we can get them involved in, maybe being weightlifting. Certainly pick up the skills of it, because that's the thing. Like getting them into the, they don't have to talk about competing straight away.
Yeah,
you just got to train them.
Yeah.
Okay, you just start the training. And I feel like if it were me, if I had the time to do it, I would probably, what do they say? If you're not paying, you're the one being sold. Start training kids for nothing, not to be involved in weightlifting, but to help them in the sport that they're probably going to drop out of at some point.
Yeah.
And then we can come along and scoop them up,
Yeah.
So, there's a bunch of kids who are involved in other sports, and I'm just teaching these skills, And for them to, if they then make the decision, hey, you know what, I'm actually not bad at this other sport, this weightlifting gig, getting the crossover is easy. Because they don't need the technical, tactical knowledge of the competition. They just need the actual content skill. Okay, they just need those kind of things. And
I think weightlifting is very overly. People think that weightlifting is overly technical, but it really is at the end of the day putting a bar over your head. So
it's technical to the extent that. Everything that you do in any sport, there is a never-ending, deep and narrow fitness point that leads to the highest levels of the sport. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that they don't need to really know anything about the competition.
The
administration part of it, all the fabric of coaches and what fits with who and what and how you qualify for that. They don't need any of that. If they just have the sporting skill down, so if you think of it this way, it's kind of like, and basically because it's an individual sport, if I can kick and run and you know, and hand pass and these kind of things, I'm then ready to start taking up the team and theory part of AFL. Well, there is no team in the same sense.
Yeah.
It's not it's the structure of the game. So you have to start thinking about these sports as, what kind of sport is this? We do invasion games. That's the team-based sports, okay? Invasion games. There is a ball. Move the ball into the opponent's scoring area, okay? And that's the theory point of it. But totalization sports, okay, so which weightlifting and powerlifting are, then you don't have all these other components to it. You can do it as an individual. You don't need the team time. So I feel like for a lot of people, if you think about where we're going, I guess, as a society, weightlifting might do okay because you can train, like the utility of the sport is probably limited. If you've got a barbell, you've got some rubber plates, you've got a space, you can do the sport. And so certainly people recognize, where is, you see these people in third world countries, lifting on a sheet of plywood, yeah, alley, with some concrete and stuff like this. It can be done. And so I feel like we could probably attack it in that way, reach out to the kids who may leverage off of it into other sports. And then if they leave that sport, then we're here, we're ready, we'll take them. So that may be something for the future.
Well, let's shift gears a bit. Let's quickly I want people to know, a bit more about Shah. So when did you start Shah Speed and Strength?
We recently had our 8th birthday in May. So we're heading into our 9th year. It came out of a need. I had been training people for a period in commercial gyms, people involved in football mostly, but a few other sports. And then it got to a point where we had to have our own space, and so that was kind of here we are. So that's hopefully we'll continue that way.
And how did you get into weightlifting?
Well, weightlifting, kind of as I was talking about before, in terms of the specific outcomes or specific parts of one sport or the general capacities of another, identifying that weightlifting is a fairly economical training method for being stronger and more powerful and having better mobility, then it's only natural, I think, to eventually be involved in coaching barbell skills. So that was the, and then once you do that enough, and people either A, get pretty good at it, or B, become interested in it, and then it's like, well, hell, we should be going in competitions and try to do well and compare yourself against other people, and that whole other part of the sporting experience takes place, wanting to do well and comparing yourself to peers. So
awesome. I think that's a really cool place to finish. Where can people find you, Peter?
Well, Shy Speed and Strength has a website, it has a Facebook page, and it has an Instagram page. So if you have looked for Shy Speed and Strength, you should be able to find those entry points, we're an open gym. People can come in when they like. There's no classes or anything like that, so it's not totally unusual, although we are obviously, I guess, at the very southern part of the city, so it's unlikely that people are kind of passing through, but we certainly have people who are in the area and will drop in and train and whatnot. So I certainly encourage anyone, if they want to go ahead and do that, they certainly can.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. It's a really cool setup you have here, I must say. It's got this feel that, when you walk in, weights are going to be lifted. Sometimes you walk into gyms. Well, sometimes you walk into gyms and you're like, what do they even do here?
stupid.
There's just
no one's coming here because it's a nice looking place. They're not coming here for a key ring or a free water bottle or anything like that. I like to think that the main thing people come, they come here for the software. Okay, they come because they've got to learn, they may stay because it certainly from a location point of view, it suits their needs. But they stay because they're getting better and they take their fitness with them. So I certainly, if people are, they want a health club, then I'm saying, hey, look, you know, I probably can't compete with that. So that's just kind of the way it is.
Cool. And Ree, where can they find you? On Instagram?
On Instagram. Should be under Rhiannon Robin, not Renanyan D'Artagnan, as I've been recently named.
That's a pretty good name.
And guys, you can find Raw Barbell Club at Raw Barbell Club on all of our social medias. In particular, check out our Instagram page, which Rhiannon is now
blogging on.
Yeah, taking care of. And check out our YouTube channel because we put up a lot of cool content and we're really proud of it. So, see you guys next time. Supersonic.